2027, Altamont Software versus Sorna Corporation. Mr. Holbrook, come on forward and proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Bill Holbrow here on behalf of Altamont appellant in the case. First, I thought I'd just address the court's questions regarding Article 3 standing briefly. Just comment on a few of the response that Sorna recently submitted. Notably, in their response, Sorna did not contest any of the following. Didn't contest that it's filed over a half a dozen lawsuits. Didn't contest that none of them have been determined on the merits. Didn't contest that it filed a lawsuit against PaxGear's media writer for infringement of the 408 patent. Didn't contest that Altamont's Outbox product provides the same functions in the same way as the media writer. They didn't contest that Sorna refused to agree not to sue Altamont for infringing the 408 patent and the four related patents. The thrust of their argument appears to be that the affiant, Mr. Kavanaugh, stated that he does not believe the Outbox infringes the 408 patent. As noted in his affidavit, he also did not believe that the media writer infringed the 408 patent either, but that did not stop Sorna from suing PaxGear. Apparently, the defendant's position is that based on that statement alone, there's no standing. If that were true and defendant's infringement opinion were determinative, I don't think there would be many patent lawsuits. As a result, I don't think there's much question on the standing issue. Turning to the more important issue, the issues relating to the final decision issued by the board. As mentioned, Sorna is a highly litigious company, which is the reason that this IPR was filed.
Yeah, but when we get to the merits, that's not really something for us to worry about. So let me
I'm just putting it in context because it is a reason that there should be the board fairly analyzed the issues in the case.
Well, the question was whether or not you were required to say more about what modifications of, how do you pronounce the reference? Kali?
I pronounce it Kale, but I'm
Kale. In your petition. And the board said this amounted to a significant evidentiary gap because they said that you needed to do more. It was a substantial modification that would have been necessary to Kale, and you needed to do more. We've got a deferential standard of review here. How is it that there's sufficient basis to overturn the board's conclusion with respect to the sufficiency of the conclusory statement made in the petition and the significant modifications that the board concluded were necessary?
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. And that is the primary issue here. And I believe that there's no question that our response, our petition, did include Kale and argued why Kale did render the 408 patent obvious. In reply, patent owner raised some issues relating to this term called the perimeter table, which was in the...
But there's no question that there was something missing in Kale, that Kale didn't deal with the DICOM stuff or whatever. So you agree you had to make some representation in your petition about how you can combine Kale with the other reference, right?
Well, Kale applied to all data. It didn't limit it to any data. In fact, we quoted sections from Kale which says this can be applied to all data. It wasn't until the patent owner raised the issue that maybe this parameter table wouldn't work with DICOM data that we addressed it and both in Dr. Ori's deposition.
So the question that we have to decide, right, is was that a significant enough gap? Was the board right that that was a gap in terms of what you needed to come forth initially
because of the failure
of Kale to specifically deal with this other DICOM stuff? And we review that for substantial evidence.
Right. I think we can't get to that, and I think the answer is that the our position was thorough enough. But the case law, and I'm quoting from Apple versus Andre Electronics, says, further, any ambiguity as to whether Apple raised the new argument on reply is eliminated when we consider whether Apple's reply arguments are responsive to arguments raised in Andrea's patent owner's response. As we have regularly held, the petitioner in an inter-parties review proceeding may introduce new evidence after the petition stage if the evidence is a legitimate reply to evidence introduced by the patent owner.
Sure.
And it goes on to say, stepping back a bit distance persuades us that the board's decision to ignore Apple's responsive arguments to issues raised by Andrea and its patent owner's response is not supported as a matter of law, and the conclusion that the reply brief constitutes an impermissible new matter is an abuse of discretion. So there's two standards. One, if it's made in response to the reply, then it comes in, and the board erred by not analyzing what was submitted in reply to issues raised by the
so
patent.
So you think there's no requirement in terms of what you have to lay out in your petition because our legal standard is, as long as it's in the reply, it's okay, and we can throw it in then, and we don't have to put anything in the petition?
That's what Apple stands for, and there's another case here. There
are, though, plenty of cases that hold that the petition has to particularly set forth the specific grounds on which the party's relying, including mapping the claims particularly to the prior art or prior to the claims. Right? I mean, I understand what you're saying, but there's also the board's rule that says that you can have new information so long as it's responsive to a prior pleading, like it says to the institution decision or the reply. But can't the board rely on both of those grounds for saying that they're going to exclude this evidence?
Well, I think you're right. I think the board, as in the Apple case, found that both, it was in response to the petitioner's response, so it comes in, and there was no factual reason to exclude it. In the Anacor versus Iancuth case, the petitioners submitted two new references as part of their argument, and those were allowed to come in because they're in response to the petitioners or to the patent owners' reply.
Yeah, but this is different. Do I understand the facts right? In this case, you relied for obviousness purposes on Kale, and then after the patent owner came in and explained the problems with that, in reply, for the first time, you come in with arguments about how you could modify Kale. I mean, that seems like introducing a new reference or introducing a new portion of a reference in reply, which we've clearly held is outside the scope of the petition.
No, first of all, the clarification that was made on reply was not new evidence. Basically, the clarification was that a parameter table is equivalent to a database table. And both the Dr. Ori, who is Altamont's expert, and Dr. Kia, who is Swarn's expert, agreed that a parameter table could be modified to accommodate the DICOM images.
Well, yes, but that Dr. Ori declaration came with the reply. You're introducing evidence that the reference you relied on for obviousness, which has been argued not to support obviousness, could be modified in a way that had you never presented as part of your petition or initial briefing.
That's because it was never an issue. We had an there's an understanding. Dr. Roy had an understanding.
You have the obligation to establish obviousness, all of the elements, all of the parameters. The patent owner pointed out a deficiency in there, and your comeback wasn't, oh no, what we provided does in fact satisfy obviousness. Your response was, well, the thing could be modified, and a skilled artisan would know how to do that. That's a new ground. That's a new argument.
No, I don't think that was the position. The position was that there was that the parameter table, which is what it's called on Kale, in which the patent owner created a very narrow definition of, we accepted that and said even under that definition, Kale still teaches it, and this is how. And both Dr. Ori and Dr. Kia confirmed that a parameter table could be modified. You can call it a database table.
Could be modified so it can be used for DICOM data. But it wasn't on its face disclosing that.
I think the quote from Dr. Ori is, would you describe that the same as a parameter table?
What, you want to tell me what page?
I'm sorry, yes. Appendix 1310.
Is that the volume or the second volume?
I believe that's the second volume.
Just give me a sec. Let me get with you.
And the question is, would you describe that as the same as a parameter table in discussing the database table that Dr. Ori identified? He said, the roof stuff underneath could be described as a parameter table, but a SQL database table, some people might call it a parameter table. So it's just semantics and computer diction.
Well, so you're looking at page 80 on this appendix, page 1310, right?
Yeah.
80 at the top, around lines 3 and 4.
Yeah, I'm looking at 7815 to 89 is the area that it's quoted there.
We've read the entire opinion, and the board obviously has an alternative holding, which is you lose on the merits. And in connection with that, it says that looking at the experts, having considered both experts now, even if considered everything the expert says, he says Kale's teaching are limited, and its type of processing of the data system would not work on DICOM for metadata without significant modifications for which Kale provides no teachings or guidance. If we take that as correct, that's the board's conclusion, having looked at all the evidence, doesn't that support the initial conclusion that you require, there are significant modifications necessary to Kale to work on DICOM, and that Kale has no teaching or guidance as to how those modifications would be made? And if we accept that as correct under whatever standard of review we're doing, then why weren't you required to, in the first instance, in support of your petition, provide that?
Well, I think there's two ways to answer that. One, as discussed, the board clearly said they weren't going to consider the information submitted in the reply. And at page 39 of the brief, I think there's some dicta in there. It's very confusing on whether they considered it with that statement or not.
Well, there's a
but they
page
do say
33. They say even if they were to consider it, you would lose, right?
Well, at page 39, they say, as discussed, Kale's teachings are insufficient to support obviousness because of significant additional modifications that were not presented in the petition.
Counsel, but I see what you're saying on page 39, but you haven't answered the question about page 33. Could you please look at page 33?
Yes.
And then answer the question. So it's 30, page 33. It's the first full paragraph is where there's an alternative holding by the board where they see even considering petitioners later raised modifications to Kale in its reply.
But they don't consider. There's no analysis here on how they come to
sure
that
there
conclusion.
Is. I mean,
it's a conclusory statement that they, because the page before, they say they're not going to consider it. And here they say even considering it, But they don't. There's no
analysis. I'm not going to defend how wonderful and fulsome the paragraph on page 33 is. However, it does have the sentence to which I referred a couple minutes ago. The full record. This is the board's analysis of the full record, including the expert testimony on both sides, as discussed above, supports that Kale's teachings are limited and its type of processing of the data stream would not work on DICOM formatted data without significant modifications for which Kale provides no teachings or guidance.
And again, there's no explanation there. They ignore all the evidence that was presented, and then they come in with this conclusory statement, which is then followed by another conclusory statement which says essentially the same thing, except at that point they put in parenthetically that were not presented in the petition. So it's not clear what they've done. The other thing that's really unique about this case
is
that
the board... Do you want to save any time for rebuttal, counsel?
Yeah, I got two quick points to make, and then I'll sit down. The other thing that's very unique about this case is that this analysis that the board came up with was sua sponte. It wasn't raised by SORNA. It was the first time we saw this was in the final decision. Never had an opportunity to address it, never had an opportunity to explain the circumstances that would have hopefully rebutted that in the mind of the board. The other issue that's very critical here is that the patent itself is silent as to how all this happens. The board found that there's no mention of key value pairs, there's no mention of what parsing or extracting means in the 408 patent. And this court has found that...
Counsel, you're beyond your time. You've used all your time in your rebuttal time. We're going to hear from opposing counsel.
I thought this was 4 minutes.
That included all of your time. It was your responsibility. That's why I tried to stop you, because
okay.
You were using all of your rebuttal time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Farrell, please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Your Honor. I'd like to start off with the Article 3 standing issue. As the Court understands, there's a three-part test for Article...
Can I ask you about that? Your reply doesn't come out and say it, but comes pretty close to saying that Altamont would have had to admit that it infringes in order to have standing. You say your second sentence is, by its own admission, they deny they infringe. Mm-hmm. Is it your view of our law that in the absence of an admission that their product infringes, there's no standing?
No, Your Honor. Clearly, in each of the cases referenced in our briefing, there were a multitude of factors that were examined by the court. You know, the court never focused on one thing. But in my conclusion of reading these cases, oftentimes the appellant did in fact admit that their products were at least implicated the patent. You know, perhaps they didn't go so far as to say that there was a
They said that you sued somebody for infringement that does a product almost exactly like theirs. How is that not suggesting their product is implicated for infringement?
Well, Your Honor, that's a conclusory statement. Altamont would like the court to believe that we as SORNA would sue any other company in the world that makes medical data recording devices.
That's not what they said. They said you sued a company that makes a product just like theirs.
Are you referring to the PaxGear reference, Your Honor?
Yes.
Okay. And that was in fact a company that was run by the declarant Brian Kavanaugh. They said that the product works in the same way. We don't have an infringement case against them. There's not any evidence in the record to test their assertion.
There's a declaration that says that it operates in the same way, and there's no contrary evidence, right?
There is no contrary evidence, but there's also, Your Honor, no objective evidence for the court to utilize to test that assertion either. It's his opinion that they work in the same way, and his statement that they work in the same way. But there is not any evidence.
He has knowledge of both of them, right? Given his unique circumstances of having worked at the other company, have been involved in the litigation on behalf of the other company, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. Yes, that is correct. He would, in theory, have knowledge of how they work. He didn't. He did, in fact, give an opinion on whether or not his product and the former Paxia product infringe the patent, which is the more important question for us.
No, it's not, actually. The more important question is, are they likely to get sued by you? And you sued somebody that makes a product they said is identical. They don't have to admit infringement in order to get jurisdiction here.
I agree that they do not have to admit infringement, but is it sufficient with no other evidence to say, I don't think these products infringe, but
you have no chance of winning on this issue. Your arguments are specious. I suggest you move on to the merits. Unless my colleagues disagree, feel free to weigh in if you do.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll move on to the merits. As the board noted in the discussion earlier today with my friend, the board did in fact note that even if they had considered the modifications that were necessary to Kale and Dicom View, it would not have changed their opinion. That is absolutely true. And it's also true that Altamont did not bring up in its initial petition the fact that modifications are necessary. Only after Sorna brought up their own argument that, in fact, a parameter table would not work to parse DICOM data. And in fact, our expert, Dr. Kia, explicitly stated that if a parameter table were used on DICOM formatted data, that the disk that would be produced by the patented invention would only have the fields written on it that were the same across all the data inputted. So you'd have a disk that would have...
So if they had done more in their petition, this case would have played out exactly the same way, right?
You would have come in
and you would have had your expert saying, no, it doesn't, and the board would have had to weigh the experts, which ultimately in alternative holding it did, right?
I agree.
The problem I have is I don't know where... I guess we're all into line drawing, and I'm not sure where the lines ought to be drawn, and maybe that's more to the board and we've got a deferential standard of review. But I mean, there could probably be a number of things that you would come up with in terms of making an argument of non-obviousness that they could or not anticipate. But obviously the petition is not going to necessarily respond to every argument you subsequently provide, right? And how are we supposed to discern where to draw the line?
I think that, fortunately, that is not an issue that you, or a decision that you have to make today. The question in front of the board today is whether or not the finding of the PTAB is supported by substantial evidence. In this case, I think it is. They did not explicitly refuse to consider the modifications testified on by Dr. Hori.
So you're relying on the alternative holding on page 33?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
You're relying on their alternative holding on page 33.
I am, Your Honor. Okay. Or at least I think it could be properly characterized as an alternative holding, yes. But
I guess all your friend has to say about that is it's a conclusory statement and it's not supported by the record. I guess your answer is no, it is.
My answer would be that it is, in fact, supported in the record. You know, they explicitly referred to the declaration testimony of both Dr. Hori and Dr. Kia, which discussed in depth the modifications necessary to Kale and Dicom View. So I would, again, stress to the panel today that this is not, you know, an issue of waiver of the board refusing to consider arguments raised by Altamont. The board considered the arguments and found them lacking, and there is substantial evidence in the record to support that conclusion.
Okay, Mr. Farrell, anything further?
Nothing further, Anna.
Okay, I'll hear your argument. Mr. Holbrow, I'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal time since I guess you got confused about the clock. So please come on up with 2 more minutes.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. This court has held that a prior art reference need only be as enabling as at the same level as the disclosure of the patent analyzed. That's Constant versus AMD Inc. 848 F second 1560. The patent here, in its totality, describing how the information is parsed and placed on a label, consists of one sentence that says the first routine parses any DICOM Part 10 file found in the incoming directory 52. Then it states there's a building image directory which magically contains the patient information file, which isn't addressed otherwise, identified as patient.txt. And then at the end it says there's a printer that they acquired from some other company which uses a merge file which incorporates this patient.txt file. That's it. There's nothing about key value pairs. There's nothing about no mention of databases, no mention of how it's stored. There's a lot of other language in there about the images and where they go. But as to the text that's printed on the labels, that's it. There's nothing else. So based on this court's holding in the Constant case, the Kale reference is that in spades. I mean, it does even more. It at least gives a option of a parameter table for the, person of ordinary skill in the art to consider to use when creating the text database. The 408 patent does nothing. The other thing to consider...
So your point is that there's not substantial evidence to support the board's finding that Kale only teaches taking the entire document as opposed to grabbing parts. Is that right?
Well, my point here was that if a faceta, a person of ordinary skill in the art, is expected to understand how to create this text database and burn CDs and put labels on them with the text based on the 408 patent, then a faceta who the board found was a pretty bright guy with a lot of experience in DICOM and computer programming also could utilize Kale to do the same thing.
Okay, thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.
Thank you very much.
All right. The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.